Yankees Files Podcast, we are back. I'm Will Harris, you're Alec Whipple, and the rest of you are probably comparably disappointed to how we're feeling. The Yankees just dropped a series in Colorado to the Rockies. They had immense trouble scoring off three of the worst starting pitchers in baseball. They didn't do much from a slugging perspective outside of Stanton's home run Stanton's home runs, plural, I guess, in the third game, which just wrapped up on an Alan Trejo walk-off solo home run off Ron Marinaccio in the 11th inning. The Yankees scored 7 runs, all on singles. The Rockies did a great demonstration of why you should simply hit the ball over the fence, and the Yankees don't have guys who are doing that reliably enough right now. They're 50 and 44 start through 94 games is tied for the 6th worst in the wild card era, but it's better than the 1995, 2007, or 2017 teams. 2007, they won 94 games. 2017, they won 91 games. It's tied with the 2021 team, who won 92 games. It's only one game behind the 2005 team, who won 95 games. So I don't really know what to make of it. But these first 94 games have been really disappointing for the Yankees, and they're not super far out of the playoff picture or anything. You know, there's even a world where in their last, whatever it is, 68 games, they could play their way back into the divisional race. They're only a game and a half out of a playoff spot, but like everything kind of really sucks right now. So Whipple, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I feel like that's a good way to put it. Everything kind of really sucks right now. You know, Gerrit Cole pitched today and did well, but it's really tough to be happy or excited about that when, you know, the rest of the game unfolded as it did. I think it's pretty bad to go into Coors Field and, as you said, put up that type of slugging performance. I feel we were all waiting for a reset that probably wasn't entirely going to happen, but you know, given with the new hitting coach, the 4-day break, I think the sting of Sunday's loss was at least wiped away a little bit by some time away from watching the Yankees. And then they came back on Friday and just, you know, disappeared after Stanton's home run. Yesterday they recovered, but today was a gut punch. And we've definitely recorded after quite a few gut punches in the last few years. And sometimes they're pretty meaningful, sometimes they're not. I always think about, you know, it's just one game and no game is really that important on its own, but they're starting to accumulate, and especially in the last month, the best this you could say this team's done is treading water. I mean, I think they've had really one winning week since Judge went down, and you know, against the Mariners and Rangers a few weeks ago. And that's, if that continues, I mean, you've seen the impact on their playoff position, and that's, they're really lucky, honestly, to only be a game and a half out, because the league is just not as a whole doing well. I mean, the Blue Jays and the Red Sox are hot right now, but the teams at the top are slumping. So everyone's kind of compressing at the middle, which I'm sure we'll, you know, analyze and hear and see all the different ways the last 68 games can go. But at this point, I think I said a few weeks ago, after they had their winning week, we saw some great pitching performances. We saw the offense have some highlights. It kind of seemed like the way they were going to win in the without Judge era, or the portion of the season. And I think they just haven't, they one, haven't really followed that, but two, have given away a lot of those games which they were positioned to win with that type of formula. I mean, today was going to be a strong pitching and you know, just enough offense to get by game. And
yeah, they should have won this game 3-1.
Should have won this game 3-1. Should have won last Sunday's game against the Cubs.
Yep.
Should have won, you know, another one of the games against the Orioles. Like, it just kind of starts to add up, and you see the formula, you see how it can happen. But if you're going to, you know, if you're going to make errors, if you're going to have the bullpen start to, you know, not implode, but some guys start to show cracks, it shows the tough nature of trying to win consistently without offense, which is, I think, what the Yankees have been trying to do and what they are starting to be unable to do. So, in short, it is very disappointing. And again, only one series, but the disappointing series since June 1st are starting to add up, and that's, it's not great. I mean, you think 2 years ago where we were talking about what they should do before the 2021 deadline, and I think we were in agreement that maybe selling was the best option, and the team turned it around in a big way.
Wait. Have you done like the historical reexamination? Did we say that? Did I say that?
We did. It was post Red Sox series, so right before they turned around. No, I just remember that episode because I remember you coming onto the pod and me coming from Fenway for probably the 20th time, and I think you were ready to sell at that point. And I'll let you, you know, add your thoughts in a second, but it took a really quick and pretty successful turnaround from that team to vault them back into the playoff picture. This team basically needs that. I don't know if selling or buying or whatever. I still think they should buy for sure. The league is that weak, but we're at that point where you start to at least consider, I mean, unless things turn around, they which they have to.
I'm trying to look back and see, I'll have to listen back to that episode. I think it's episode 12. So let's have the buy or sell at the trade deadline discussion. One thing that this team lacks is a group of players that it makes sense to sell. You know, you think about a contending team that is out there looking for either a really high quality rental or a guy with some team control who's not very expensive, who, you know, is an immediate upgrade to their team. So you can think about, you know, the analogs there being, I don't know, Shohei Ohtani and Juan Soto would be the extreme examples of each of those. Who would you sell if you were the Yankees and you were to sell? Because, you know, Luis Severino's been awful. He's an expiring contract. There's not really much else there, right? Like, what if you support selling, and we'll get to that as the next question, but if you were to say this team should sell, who would they sell? Luis Severino and some bullpen guys? Not that Severino has any value right now.
I mean, I think the reason the 2016 Yankees rebuild was so successful is that they really took control of the bullpen market in a market that needed bullpen arms. And I think they could do the same. Like, they have the bullpen arms if they really want to go in that direction. It's just the circumstances lined up so, you know, so in the right direction for them. And they had the guys who had the history, who were performing well. I mean, maybe you have those guys right now, but I just don't know. Like, Andrew Miller and Aroldis Chapman have a bit of, you know, a prestige to them that I don't know if, like, buyers would be as desperate right now for the Yankees' bullpen arms. And even if they were, it's like, it's really hard to know if those circumstances arise. I think right now, yeah, Severino, but, like, he's obviously not doing well. Maybe if you're convinced that you don't want to re-sign Harrison Bader, you try to flip him. Other than that, I mean, I think you could have the conversation about trying to move DJ LeMahieu, but that's a salary dump. I mean, that's not getting you anything. And then if you want to return to moving Gleyber Torres, then you're hurting your team. Definitely. You're hurting your team this year. You're going to hurt your team next year. And with any conversation about selling, it has to come with the presumption that you're going to line up to compete in 2024. It just has to. So any move can't hurt the team in 2024. I think all that's to say, there's not that much. And if there was a deal to be made, it would almost be like a product of luck or circumstances. They don't have the guy who teams would lust after.
Yeah. And that makes it tough. And the other thing that makes it tough is we're coming off an offseason in which they signed Aaron Judge and Carlos Rodon, you know? And that is an indication of, hey, we plan to contend and we plan to contend for a while. I don't feel like you can have that offseason and then sell whatever selling would look like for this team. And as you've detailed, you know, there isn't really a viable selling strategy outside of Bader, maybe Glaber, and, you know, maybe Severino. Not that we really think you can get all that much for Severino right now. So then you get into the Clay Holmeses. You know, what does someone pay for a year and a half of Clay Holmes? What if someone pay for a year and a half of Jonathan Loaisiga? What does someone pay for 2.5 years of Michael King? And then I don't think they would go near the pre-arb guys, because that seems like a weird place to look. So, I don't think selling is viable. So the question becomes, do you think that the Yankees should aggressively buy at the trade deadline?
Yes, I do. Because I think this team needs the improvement. I think this in my mind is like 2021. So I guess the way I think about it is their poor performance makes me more want to buy versus, you know, if you think that you can do it with this group or largely this group, wanting to upgrade them. I guess 2021 versus 2022, this is definitely more of a 2021 situation, and it helped that team. I mean, I don't think that's crazy to say the reaction to not doing well is to try to invest more in the team, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, unless something about these first 94 games has changed management's opinion of what the objective for this season is, then the way to achieve the objective for this season is to go out and buy, right? Like, I don't...
Right. Unless there was some scenario, which it's not going to happen, where Judge was out for the year or something, where, like you said, if some scenario changed their objective for the season, because that, I mean, it's logical to me. Like, I think people's reaction to it is actually pretty illogical, where this team is bad and so we should all give up on them. I don't get that as the reaction. I think you can be frustrated and your desire to improve the team should be even stronger, because if they were 9 games out, then okay, it's looking hopeless, we should sell or just stand pat, kind of change course. It's really hard to make up a 9-game deficit, but they're a game and a half out, they're right in it, and they're obviously not doing well. I mean, there's problems with the team. So this is like almost the perfect scenario to want to incentivize management to push and gain those extra wins on the win curve and to try to improve the team. I feel like if you look at it any other way, you're being illogical. And that's not even assuming the Yankees. I don't think that's an assumption or a desire to want the Yankees to be something they're not. That's just wanting a team that isn't good or is struggling to do better and giving them the tools to do so.
Yeah, I completely agree. Not surprisingly. The team set an objective, you know, to contend for the World Series. They are not out of playoff contention. All you have to do, as the Phillies showed us, to contend for the World Series is get into the playoffs and get hot. So, you know, why wouldn't they buy? I understand people's frustration with the team. Like, I think that is a separate discussion, and it's a discussion I'm willing to have. But when the question comes down to how the Yankees ought to operate over the course of the rest of the season, whether it should be that they're a game and a half out of the playoff spot on July 16th, therefore they should not, or they should treat the season as over, or they're a game and a half out of a playoff spot on July 16th, therefore they should treat the season as if there's everything to be gained. Like, that's one discussion. And I think we agree on how they should handle that. But let's talk about the fact that there is...
Wait, hold on. Let me add one more thing in, because I just saw this. And this is actually kind of relates to a conversation we had earlier a few episodes ago, where I saw that one of the reporters, I think Chris Kircher from The Athletic, asked Boone, does he still think the team is championship caliber? So in that is possibly the dumbest question I've ever seen posed. And I think Boone has every right to be pissed. And I think everyone should be pissed that's being asked, because and everybody who's applauding him for asking that question and somehow asking this question is going to expose the Yankees as not pursuing the right goals or not really understanding the quality of their team is insane. I mean, I have been on Aaron Boone, of the two of us, more for not giving great answers to questions. But in this case, what is he supposed to say other than you're wrong? I mean, that's a question that is completely fan bait and kind of goes into this conversation, because I think people want the Yankees to give up on their team and they want the manager to basically acknowledge that, or they know when the manager doesn't acknowledge that, they can throw it back to the fans for, you know, for applause, and the fans will say what great questions these are. So I think everybody needs to take it down 10 notches. Frustration with the manager's strategies, frustration with the way he, you know, handles in-game situations, or even, you know, we might disagree on the accountability issues. Definitely, you know, could be like, I don't want to have that conversation again, but I think in this specific case, to basically ask Aaron Boone, have you given up on the season, and then throw up your arms when he says, no, we haven't given up, it's just one series, we're pissed about losing, is just the worst kind of reporting. And I think the worst kind of mentality. So I'm annoyed. I'm really annoyed that that's the, what's being considered good reporting.
Yeah. I completely agree. Look, Chris Kirschner has a job to do, and part of his job is getting clicks, and that's fine. But you're completely right. There's no like secret question that if a reporter finally asks it, it will, you know, expose the Yankees as fraudulent or as not having as lofty goals as they, you know, profess to have or any of that. Like it is ridiculous. And people are, you know, zeroing in on that question and Hal Steinbrenner saying, you know, a few weeks ago when they were in a playoff spot, like, I don't know what people are so mad about, and things like that. Like, how do fans expect the organization to talk about the team? Because if they expect the organization to talk about the team in the way that I'm interpreting, I would simply ask them, when have they heard an organization talk about the team that way ever? Like, do you know what I mean?
Right. Like, what are you looking for that they can provide that's ever been provided, especially for a team like the Yankees that, you know, would never admit, even if it's clear that they're going to not be quote unquote championship caliber. I mean, I just don't even get what that phrase means. Like,
it's not a thing.
It's dumb. And I think it's indicative of the way people want to respond to this loss by, you know, pushing the team away, burying them even more instead of wanting them to improve. And it kind of goes to what you say. You know, I think people want to see this team fail to confirm what they believe about the team, as opposed to being frustrated for reasons that we're going to talk about and wanting them to improve to eliminate those frustrations. And I get the reporters are doing a job, but they obviously have keyed in on this and they're playing to their fan base.
Yeah, completely. So, you know, I think if we don't have this conversation, we'll be accused by people up to and including my father of being apologists and not being hard enough on this team and, you know, all manner of things like that. This season has been a disappointment. Like, let's make no bones about it. There are only six players. Well, if you don't count Greg Allen, who only has 17 plate appearances, there are only five players on this team who have been above league average hitters. Only three of those are currently healthy: Anthony Rizzo, Gleyber Torres, and Giancarlo Stanton. And only two of those are currently good in Gleyber and Stanton. You know, Harrison Bader is a great defender, but the offense really has not been there. You know, we are out of the honeymoon phase with Billy McKinney. IKF, in spite of his production being shaped differently, is exactly the guy he was last year. Anthony Volpe is a rookie who experienced some great batted ball luck and then some bad batted ball luck and is still figuring out how to hit at the major league level. DJ LeMahieu may be coming on, but has still been terrible. Josh Donaldson, who is now hurt, has been awful. They've gotten nothing out of the catcher position. Oswaldo Cabrera had a good game today, but, you know, in which he raised his WRC plus by 7 points, but he hasn't been anything offensively. You know, the Yankees, I still maintain that the Yankees came into the season with a roster good enough to win the World Series, and that anyone who is saying that the Yankees should have seen that Giancarlo Stanton, DJ LeMahieu, and Anthony Rizzo would all be much worse than anyone expected them to be and than any system projected them to be is ridiculous. And I think we all knew that the team was going to rely very singularly on Aaron Judge. And as went Aaron Judge, so would go the Yankees. And I think we were all fine with that, because when Aaron Judge is on the field, he is the best player in baseball, maybe second best. You know, we don't need to have the Ohtani conversation, but I'll cover myself there. He's one of the top two players in baseball. And the reason a team can afford to singularly rely on him is because of how good he is and how he will reliably carry them. So I don't have a problem with the way the roster was constructed going into the season. I do have a problem with the way it's been managed. I think that Oswald Peraza more than earned playing time that he has not gotten. It should not have taken Josh Donaldson, who was awful, getting hurt while DJ LeMahieu was also playing terribly, to get Oswald Peraza back on this roster. I think that the Jake Bowers situation is actually genius. I believe in what Jake Bowers is doing, but to rely on Billy McKinney and Willie Calhoun and Franchi Cordero to the extent that the Yankees have is embarrassing. I think that turning IKF into an everyday outfielder has burned them numerous times. He is not capable of playing out there. The only thing he's good at is jump, and he still doesn't catch as many balls as he ought to. That's something that probably should have been addressed in a more sufficient way over the offseason. I think there are questions that you can legitimately ask about the promotion or lack thereof of certain prospects. Why is Austin Wells still in Double-A when catcher is presenting itself as a position of need? You know, the Peraza question, obviously, you know, how aggressive should they have been with Everson Pereira, given that there's a hole in the outfield? Should he have been up to Triple-A earlier? You know, I think that there's a lot to be happy with the pitching staff, especially with the way that they've fought through injuries and excelled in spite of not having Nestor Cortez, not having Jonathan Loaisiga for a long time, not having Luis Severino, and then later Severino being bad, not having Lou Trevino, not having Scott Efros. You know, Nick Ramirez blew the game today, but he's been a good find. They've, I think, gotten more than I would reasonably expect out of the arms and less than I would reasonably expect out of the bats. And what we're finding is that scoring runs is actually really important. And I wonder if there was anyone out there who was saying that, like, the things the Yankees should care about are extra base hits and hitting the ball over the wall and things like that. And they haven't done that. Again, I don't think anyone would have reasonably expected Rizzo, Stanton, and DJ LeMahieu to sum to a WRC plus of, what, like 184, 294? Like, they're below average on average between the three of them. I don't think anyone would have expected that. Like, there are two people on this team playing to their projection, basically. Gleyber Torres and Aaron Judge. Only one of them is healthy. The lineup's not going to succeed that way. And I know that when you go into a season and the team starts to underachieve, it can be hard to make moves. Teams don't know who they're willing to part with, and that's how you end up relying on the Jake Bowerses and the Billy McKinneys of the world. But, like, I'm at the same time that I don't blame management for the team that they brought into this season. I absolutely blame management for the way that they have responded, or in many cases failed to respond to the way that the team has played thus far. But what I'll also say is we've seen Yankees teams start out this badly or worse and win the division and go to the league championship series. 7 of the last 24 pennant winners since 2010. Since 2010. 7 of the last 10 pennant winners, 7 of the last 24 pennant winners, sorry, have won 50 or fewer games. 2019 Nationals, who won the World Series, were 50-44. The 2011 Cardinals, who won the World Series, were 50-44. The 2021 Braves, who won the World Series, were 46-48. The 2014 Royals were 48-46. The 2015 Mets, 49-45. Same with last year's Phillies. 2012 Tigers were 50-44 as well. So there's a wealth of evidence that winning just 50 of your first 94 games is not a damning thing. And obviously the playoffs are bigger than they were in all but one of those years. So, you know, we have that. I think that there's a lot to be gained for this team in the final 68 games. That's not to erase the fact that the first 94 have been extremely underwhelming, and that management's response, or as I said, lack of response, has been underwhelming as well. But I think when you look at this team, it would be surprising, I think, if, you know, even Gleyber Torres and Giancarlo Stanton, who have been, you know, Gleyber, I think, about at his projection, Stanton below, weren't better over the rest of the season than they've been to this point. Rizzo might be who he is, but Rizzo leveling out as a 112 WRC plus bat instead of regressing from like 160 to 112 is going to feel different. There's some headroom for Anthony Volpe. There's some headroom for DJ LeMahieu. We can reasonably expect, especially with Judge coming back, with Bowers coming back, Bowers way below his expected stats, by the way, you got to find a way to get that bat in the lineup. Plus the trade deadline, there's a lot this team can do to start playing better, but it has to happen. And to this point, it hasn't happened. They haven't given us a lot of reason to believe that it will with their play on the field. And that's a shame. And a Yankees team should not look like this. This is not how the Yankees should be playing baseball. This is not a level of performance that the Yankees should tolerate. But I also think that they're probably right that they kind of have to be in a holding pattern until the combination of the trade deadline and the Judge return. Like, that's just the dynamics of a baseball season. So, you know, TLDR, I'm disappointed. I still believe in the potential of this team, but I don't think they will reach the feats that I thought they might without material additions.
Yeah. So, I mean, I agree with the parts of that, lots of that. And I think going into the season, my expectations were definitely tempered by the fact that I think I left last season really disappointed with the fact that there were significant holes on the roster that were continuing to get regular at bats. And I said, if Josh Donaldson comes to camp, if Aaron Hicks comes to camp, if IKF comes to camp and is getting regular playing time, that's a problem. That was what I thought, maybe not the only thing, but I thought one of the main things that really hurt the Yankees in crucial spots last year. And Josh Donaldson, Aaron Hicks, and IKF have all hurt the Yankees in different ways. I think that annoys me more than anything related to LeMahieu, Stanton, Rizzo, anyone else. Because, like you said, I think the most unforeseeable thing, and something that if you predicted it, you're lying, is that those guys would regress in the way that they did. And even, I mean, Stanton and Rizzo had really good Aprils, and especially Rizzo. I mean, he's probably the one I'm most kind of befuddled by, confused, concerned.
Yeah, Rizzo fell off a cliff some point in, you know, around that Padres yeah. series and just has not been the same.
And if it was an injury, then I don't know. Like, if you would have to think that the Yankees, who are always very, you know, conservative with injuries, would have addressed this more so than giving him a few days off in Seattle afterwards. But the like it or not, I mean, that, you know, you just were not correct if you said you had any prediction on those guys. But what I think that has hurt this team is, I agree, the inability to bring guys into situations where they're best positioned to succeed, and using the talent they have in the minors to supplement in the best possible way. I think there's, you know, if you're looking at the stay pat, these Yankees are good, which I don't really think we can do, you know, don't change a thing versus sell everyone. I think there's a middle ground, and I think everyone should be addressed on a case-by-case basis. Like, I'm not going to say Giancarlo Stanton should be traded because he is heating up. He has been good. We know what he is. We know what he can do. He's already shown us this year he can do that. But on the other hand, I don't know if I can look at DJ LeMahieu right now and say, that's a guy I want playing significant time down the stretch. You know, I don't know if that means being traded. I don't know if that means being benched or just a Volpe, Peraza, Torres, Rizzo infield. And I think, you know, if that's the solution, you still have the problem of Rizzo. So it's almost like a sinking ship with so many holes to plug that you can't really address any of them. And that overlooks guys like Harrison Bader, who, as you pointed out on Twitter, haven't really been lighting it up with the bat recently.
I'm gonna make a proposal, and I want to know what you think about it.
Okay.
When Jake Bowers comes back and he is ramping baseball activities, when Jake Bowers comes back, Anthony Rizzo should go on the Phantom IL. Jake Bowers should be the first baseman.
I agree if there's a real injury. And I know Phantom IL, but is, you know, I don't know if they're willing to just make up an injury out of thin air. Maybe they tie it to something with his back, but something. I mean, I 100% agree the guy probably needs a breather. I just don't know if that will fix him. Like, it's weird to me that if, I guess what I'm trying
I think the reason you do that is it allows you to make Anthony Rizzo the corresponding move for Jake Bowers instead of Oswald Peraza.
Right.
And maybe right now Cabrera is stacking up to be the corresponding move for Bowers, but I think you need to get Bowers at first base. You need to separate him from the discussion of pursuing an outfielder. Like, mm-hmm. don't allow yourself to be in the position to say, oh, Jake Bowers is our trade deadline outfield acquisition. No, Jake Bowers is a first baseman. He's going to play first base for you because he has been better than Anthony Rizzo, and his expected numbers are far better than Anthony Rizzo's. You make Jake Bowers your first baseman. You keep the Glaber, Volpe, and the hotter hand of DJ and Peraza in the infield. Or maybe, you know, Glaber, DJ, and the hotter hand of Volpe and Peraza. However that works out. And then you still have the outfield question to address of, we can option Oswaldo Cabrera, or we can option IKF, and let's go get a real outfielder.
Can they option IKF? I thought you can't go down if you have 5 years without being giving consent.
I thought IKF had options remaining.
But I think he's...
Oh, no, he doesn't. Right? He doesn't.
Okay.
Yep, he hit the 5 years of service time. You're right. So anyway, you can DFA IKF for all I care. They can separate the Bowers move, who, if healthy, can help the team most at first base because he can't hurt them in the outfield and he can hit better than Rizzo. From the question of acquiring another outfielder. That's why I would make Rizzo the move for Bowers. That's what I was thinking there.
And I think that's valid. I think one of the frustrations I have with the Yankees is they're protecting guys like IKF, who, again, haven't done anything to really embarrass themselves, haven't been put in positions where they can contribute, but don't really do anything that can't be replaced and are being protected like they are irreplaceable. As for the Rizzo thing, I mean, if you can get one of your veteran leaders to, you know, like, I guess it's really hard to know, you know, what's going on with Rizzo. You know, can you put it as a back thing? Can you get one of your veteran leaders on board with, you know, taking off 2 weeks to give someone else a chance. And then you have the issue, if there's not a real injury, what do you do 2 weeks later? Like, are we just sending Anthony Rizzo into purgatory, or are we going to, because the thing with Rizzo is he's going to play pretty much every day if he's on the team. And that's a problem. Like, that's what is frustrating about the Yankees. Going back to the irreplaceable thing, there's guys who aren't important that are being treated like they're irreplaceable. And because there are veteran guys, I'm more frustrated with the fact that guys who are older are being treated like they have unlimited playing time when they shouldn't, versus the fact that guys who are older are regressing. Because if guys who are older are regressing and they're being treated as if they're regressing or they're not doing well, that's fine. But there's the way, the management that you're talking about, where your solution is, I could see it. I mean, I think it would help. I just have a hard time believing, unless there's a legitimate injury, that the Yankees would be able to say to Rizzo, or he would agree to, or that would be the process of clearing your spot at first base. And it clearly would make the team better, right? Like, there's no doubt in my mind right now, a healthy Jake Bowers is going to hit better than whatever this is with Rizzo. It's just hard to know, because all of this decision-making is so, you know, kind of hidden from us, or, you know, we don't understand why Josh Donaldson is batting fourth, playing, you know, third base when he's hitting 150. And is it because he's a veteran bat, or is it because they actually believe that he can do something well? I don't know. I mean, it's really hard to know. I think the way you describe that infield is probably how I would set it. And then you have in your outfield, Judge, Bader, a trade acquisition, Stanton, catcher. Like,
okay,
that,
so here's
a good team.
Here's a question that I have. How would you handle, I still don't know if I believe in this stuff with like DHs playing the field and whatnot, but how would you handle the fact that, or the apparent fact that Stanton hits better when he plays the field?
I don't think that will be an issue. I think they're going to be very protective of Judge when he's coming back. So I think there's clearly an opportunity for Stanton to play the outfield and Judge to DH more, at least in the early going. And maybe that gives you, you know, flexibility if you acquire another outfielder to rotate. But I think if Stanton is able to play the field as much as he's been playing, which is very clear, he's kind of all systems go out there right now, I think that's fine and definitely will help Judge maybe come back a little earlier than he would be able to otherwise.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So am I...
But of that team, like the hypothetical team I'm describing, where you have your infield, you have, say, Cody Bellinger, Judge, Bader, Stanton, like, that's a good team, and you've changed half of the starting lineup, basically. Like, I think people want Ohtani and Soto, and trust me, I do too. But if you rolled out that team, I would be happy with the level, the shakeup there. I mean, is that how you feel?
Yeah. So I tweeted a few days ago, and this was before the Donaldson injury. I tweeted that the Yankees begin a series in Atlanta on August 14th, and I don't see any reason why the roster can't look like this at that time. And the roster I had was Rizzo, Glaber, Volpe, and DJ in the infield, Bellinger, Bader, and Judge in the outfield, Trevino and Higashioka catching, Stanton, IKF, Jake Bowers, Billy McKinney, DH bench utility. I even had, you know, Cabrera and Peraza in the minors at that point. Now, you know, with Peraza on the major league roster, that opens up some interesting stuff. I'm very confident in the ability of a team built the way that tweet describes, or you're describing, to play well. Like, I don't think there's any question that that team is built to win a number of games. But like, I also don't think that there's any question that, like, this team, as it was built coming into the season, ought to have won a lot of games. And I think that's the tough part. But yeah, I think if you get Cody Bellinger, you get maybe a bullpen arm at the trade deadline, maybe a depth starter, because you're kind of more innings than Clark Schmidt has ever thrown. We don't really know what the Severino situation is. We don't know how Nestor's going to be when he comes back. But, like, I'm confident in the pitching. then you've built a very good team. It just has to happen, and then those guys have to play well. And that, like, the guys on the team playing well, the guys on the team who should play well playing well, has been the thing that is holding this team back, because they haven't done it. So, sure, they can go get Cody Bellinger. They can go get, you know, Candelario from the Nationals. They can go get whoever, but that guy then has to show up and play well. And I think that is becoming the assumption that I'm least comfortable with, just given the fact that, like, I also thought Anthony Rizzo was going to be good this year, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I guess, you know, you don't know for sure about anything, but I think there are questions that could have been answered, maybe not the Anthony Rizzo question, but questions that could have been answered about what this current team could provide if the players on the team were used the proper way. I think it's, again, criminal that Oswald Peraza, we don't really know if he's a sure thing or what he can provide. I think it's crazy that on July 16th, we're only now starting to learn that. And we gained 10 Josh Donaldson home runs, you know, 8 of them, which didn't come in a win, which didn't contribute to a winning game. So, like, and I don't, everybody's saying it. So sometimes my tendency is like, well, you know, if everyone's saying it, like, maybe it's just, maybe everyone's overlooking something, or it's just like the popular thing to say. But in this case, I really think like everybody is right. I think it was an easy move. And I don't know what the impetus was for keeping Donaldson as long as they did. Probably financial, maybe the way, you know, maybe just wanting to rely on veterans, given how the rest of the team is deployed. But if you're going to succeed with veterans, I really think you need to have a mix of young guys. And if you don't have the young guys, that's fine. But we talked about this last year. The Yankees are getting to a point where the young guys can contribute. And I think the biggest failing of the first half is that they haven't been put in positions to contribute aside from Anthony Volpe, which, although there have been growing pains, he's really had a positive impact and probably a better impact than running out IKF for another season. So I consider Volpe's deployment a net positive, even if it hasn't been as good as maybe we might have expected. So I think you, like, they've almost backed themselves into a corner where, you know, your only option is to acquire guys and just put the best alignment on the field forward and just hope that that's going to do well without really having proof that it's going to do well. But the, I think the sad part of this conversation is like, this is a pipe dream, because DJ LeMahieu and Anthony Rizzo are going to keep getting as much playing time as they have been. Maybe I'm wrong. Like, I would love to be wrong, but nothing about the way that they've been used. And this isn't, again, I don't really care if they trade either of them or DJ, you know, maybe specifically, like, financially fine. But if they're on the team, that's fine. It's just about the way they're being used. Like, just use them less. Use some guys who are hitting well more and see what happens. And if DJ LeMahieu has to sit on the bench 5 of every 7 games because he's not doing well with the bat, that's fine. You know, maybe he'll do better. Maybe try again next year. But I think right now they're costing themselves wins because of that insistence that the team is going to get better, which some players, I think, yes, I agree. Like, we're not benching Giancarlo Stanton, but with some cases, like, it's getting late early out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. They have, it feels like they didn't learn the lessons that 2022 taught them, namely that youth is a good thing to have around, or at least that they learned that lesson and they thought it only applied to Anthony Volpe.
Right, because Volpe is being treated in such a different way than
Volpe is being treated like he's Anthony Rizzo.
Right, which is, again, a positive thing. I'm glad.
Yeah, that's how they should treat him. It's not how they should treat Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah, right. Like, I mean, like, we're learning lessons, but then we're also, like, misapplying them.
Whoa.
I think it goes back to, it goes back to, you know, the article I wrote, like, 2 years ago, where sometimes the Yankees, I think, learn lessons and then don't learn them either in the correct ways, or they misapply them, or they use them well past when they should. And I don't know where that comes from, but it's just from our side, from our limited knowledge, it's pretty apparent. And I think everyone out there who notices it is right. Sometimes you don't have to be a contrarian. Sometimes everybody is kind of picking up on the correct thing. And the most frustrating thing is that the solutions are there. Like, I think They're there either, not even on the trade market. They are there on the trade market, but they're there internally. And Aaron Judge coming back is going to be a big part of the way the rest of the season goes. I refuse to believe, and I know you agree, that expecting a team to play at its best without its best player is anything but a fool's errand. Mm-hmm. I think the Yankees are as good as their best players, and Aaron Judge is their best player. I'd feel the same way if Gerrit Cole got injured, but there's so much around him that can either be improved or reshuffled, and the things that they're tolerating and the things they consider to be irreplaceable are, in fact, very replaceable and should not be tolerated. Yep. And can be done very easily. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. So, Whipple, the Yankees are about to head to, or probably on their way now, to L.A. to face the Angels.
The Anaheim Angels.
The Anaheim Angels, California Angels, Los Angeles Angels, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. The Angels, as it stands today, are 3.5 games behind the Yankees. God willing, it'll be 3 games because they'll beat the Astros in the game that they're currently playing. And then the Yankees have a midweek off day on Thursday before facing the Aroldis Chapman-less Kansas City Royals on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Yankee Stadium. I think the appropriate way to ask this question, as our next podcast will probably be on July 24th, is the Yankees are 50-44 right now. How many losses do the Yankees need to have on July 24th for you to come on the podcast and say they should no longer buy at the deadline?
I don't think it's losses. It's more like relative position. I guess if the worst was to happen this week and they're suddenly 8.5 games out of a playoff spot, then I think you have that conversation. But if they lose like 4 out of 7, but they're still like 2.5 games out, I don't know if you can change your tune. I mean, I want to improve this team until it is clear that this team doesn't have a chance to improve. And I also think that if you're a certain number of games out of the third wild card, like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, like, it is a bit of a fool's errand to then push all your chips in hopes of a miracle run. I mean, I know everyone points to the 2021 Braves, the 2019 Nationals, 2011 Cardinals. Those teams are outliers because of what they're able to achieve. And they also, the flip side of that is they took advantage of weak competition, and that opportunity is exactly in front of the Yankees right now. They are also in a league with weak competition. So I believe it is possible, but I don't want to mortgage the future and bet on an outlier. I don't think the Yankees are in that position right now, but I think if you're looking at, I'd say once you get to like 5 or 6 games out then of the third wild card, then you start thinking about it a little more clearly. But even like 3 or 4 maybe, but I mean, that's a good week. You can make that up. I don't know. That seems optimistic, but that, I think it goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning. It's not really optimism about the team's play. It's optimism about what it takes to make the playoffs and the state of the league.
Severino, Herman, Rodon against the Angels, and presumably Schmidt, Cole, Severino against the Royals. I know I don't normally ask you to do this, but are you interested in telling me how many games you think the Yankees are going to win of these next 6?
Oh, geez. I mean, the optimist in me wants to say 4, but I feel like 3 and 3 weeks are like how it's been trending. But given the Angels and the Royals struggle as much of the Rockies, and the Rockies are worse, obviously, but these are 2 teams that are struggling, and I'm still going to bet on the Yankees to beat teams that are struggling. I'll say 4 and 2. I think I will say that I don't know if their playoff position is going to improve that much. I think everything's going to be stagnant, but I think they can win series against the Angels and Royals, even with the current state of the team.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, what do you think about the question you posed to me before?
I think if they are 50-50, then with 62 games left, it would be an extremely difficult proposition to say they should buy.
But if there's still a game and a half out,
I think that changes it. But I don't expect 50 and 50 to be game and a half out.
Okay, fair.
But yeah, I think like 4-2, 3-3, they're more than fine. I really would not like them to lose both these series because they haven't won a series in July yet, which I don't like. But like that's a trend that I don't think will continue. Like even when the Yankees are playing this poorly, like I don't think they're actually this bad. Anyway, let's do confidence and wrap this up because we are being accused of being a Brian Cashman burner account and apologists on Twitter right now because of two stats that I posted, both of which I've mentioned on this podcast. The first is that in 2017 through 94 games, the Yankees were 49-45. This year, they're 50-44. And seven of the last 24 pennant winning teams going back to 2010 won 50 or fewer of their first 94 games, including numerous World Series winners. Obviously, 2020 is excluded from that because there weren't 94 regular season games. I don't like the way this team has played. Like, I feel like that message is not going to come across when people listen because it never comes across, even when I emphasize it. I don't like the way this team has played. The way this team has played has not convinced me that they cannot play well enough to do exciting things over the next couple months. Whipple, we skipped it last week, and I thought it was good for the vibes that we did, but I won't skip it again. Your confidence out of 10 in this team.
I feel like last time I was at 7.5, maybe. That kind of sounds familiar because it was, you know, they were playing okay against some poor teams, but the last few series have been pretty bad. I think what bugs me the most is just giving away winnable games. And, you know, they've been doing that a few times. We've obviously talked about it. I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you're watching the team. So I don't need to relitigate in 10 different ways how they've been bad. I think this would be, again, you kind of what you had said. You have to look at this in terms of where they stack up against the rest of the league. And you have to, you know, if they were at a similar record and were in much worse playoff position, I think things would be pretty bleak. But as of right now, you know, they're tied for I'm not even going to say it like that. They're one of the team, you know, the top teams looking it out on the outside looking in. And, you know, that probably saved this from being a pretty bad confidence rating. I'm going to go at a 6. I think that it's above average because they're right in the middle of it and, you know, they have the opportunity to succeed. And I think if they didn't have that opportunity, I wouldn't have confidence, but my confidence comes from them having the opportunity, them having the tools to do so, anticipation of what's to come in the next few weeks. And I think that's the other big thing. If, you know, if the trade deadline goes by and they don't upgrade this team in a material way, I think it's very fair to have a lot less confidence. But in these next 2 weeks, there's the possibility of upgrades. And I think all of that kind of leads to a 6, you know, slightly above average, but pretty far down from the 8-10 we've been sitting at, or, you know, 7-10 we've been sitting at for the first 3 months of the year.
Yeah. 6.5 is what I feel. I think I'm more excited about Jake Bowers coming back when he does than you are. I think I'm more bullish about the impact that Aaron Judge will have. And I think that I am more confident that they will have a good trade deadline. And then I also feel like just like the guys that are there are better than they've been. Like on average, the guys that are there are better than they've been. And 6.5 is low for me. I doubt I've been there since 2021, and 2021 was not fun. I repeatedly called it an awful year to start a Yankees blog. But, you know, here we are. People didn't like Aaron Boone saying it, and they're not going to like me saying it. But, you know, everything that they want is still out ahead of them and is still within reach. And as much as my dad isn't going to like hearing this, you just got to make the playoffs. You just got to get to the dance. It's funny to me that as the avid fan of UConn basketball that he isn't buying into the you just got to get to the dance point of view. I think they can put themselves in a position to succeed. I think they will do so. But what it's going to come down to is the guys who are there being the people that they're supposed to be and the players that they're supposed to be. And that's the thing that I'm least confident in. But I feel like it can't continue to evade them. So 6.5. Whipple, before we wrap up here on this, one of the more somber episodes of Yankees Files, any parting shots from you?
Yeah, you know, maybe I should have boosted my confidence, because the confidence in my preseason predictions for Gerrit Cole to be AL Cy Young, 6 innings, 11 strikeouts, 1 run today, only Yankee at the All-Star game. It was a great week for me personally, just getting a lot of Gerrit Cole content in some poorly chosen suits, you know, with his family on the mound in the first inning, learning what, you know, some good outfield defense looked like. It was Gerrit Cole is the, and you know, was this last week the face of the Yankees, and it came at the cost of literally everything else going right for the 2023 Yankees. And I'm acknowledging that might be the new Whipple curse, but you know what? Like, life is short, and I'm going to enjoy my favorite player just having a year for the ages. So if the Yankees tank this year, at least Gerrit Cole is having a good year. Allow me some self-indulgence, if nothing else.
Well, there you go. There you
a
have
great,
it.
You know, a great team supportive
exactly.
note to leave on.
Yeah. That's what I was hoping you would say, is like, here's some things that only matter to me and to Gerrit Cole. All right. As we wrap up here, people can keep up with everything we do at YankeesFiles.com. They can follow us on Twitter, where we are currently the object of many people's ires, because they want to give up on the team, where we are at Yankees Files. We're on TikTok at Yankees Files Podcast. And of course, the podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back here same time, same place next week to recap the series in LA and the series against Kansas City at the stadium. Until then, let's go Yankees.